You're listening to the Body Confidence Podcast. Take a deep breath, because this could be the beginning of the rest of your life.
I'm 30 years old. I am originally from Rochester, New York. I lived there until I graduated high school, and then I moved to London, UK. And I lived in London for 9 years. So I went to university there as well as worked for an additional 5. I moved back to the US in 2014, and that's when I moved to Baltimore. So I've been here now like 3.5 years. I work for a startup, which is called Spot Hero. I was originally at Parking Panda, so I'm an account executive there. I work in like business development. Mm-hmm. I was originally at Parking Panda, but they were acquired in April, so that happened during my diagnosis, which was fun. On the diagnosis side, I was diagnosed in November 2016, so I was going through treatment through all of 2017, and it only ended in December. So, wow. Yeah, that's kind of the gist of it.
Wow. Okay. That's really cool that you traveled around so much. I've traveled a little bit, but compared to other people, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. No, I haven't traveled.
Yeah, I know. I guess I can be like, yeah, no, I'm pretty cool in that way. Like I did get to travel a lot. I was very fortunate. That was kind of why I moved over there, was to go to school and also to take weekend trips to different countries. It was pretty cool.
What's your earliest memory of like taking notice of your body?
Yeah, so I feel like I feel like that maybe there was times like when I was really, really young that I don't remember, but in terms of like a very clear memory of kind of looking at my body and sort of taking notice of it, I think I'm going to say I was either 11 or 12. Mm-hmm. And I was hanging out with my best friend at the time, and her mom was making some comments. We were in the kitchen, and she brought up cellulite, and I remember just being like, I don't really know what that is. And then she kind of made a note to like point at one of my legs. And I mean, I remember just looking down, and I was like, oh, there's like kind of a little like dimpling in my thigh. And I would say that was probably like the first time that I was just like mortified, like something bad was happening and I couldn't understand it. And it was like from then on, like anytime anything was happening, like changing in my body, like going through puberty or anything like that, it was just, I was hyper-focused on it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I think that a lot of people, it's very common for the first interaction and kind of awareness that they have of their body to be negative like that, where someone, mm-hmm. someone points something out that, like you said, you didn't even know what it was. And then instantly your mind went to, oh my gosh, this is bad. This is something that I need to fix.
Yeah.
And exactly. It's sad that's usually the first part that we notice ourselves.
It's so true. Like I was just thinking, I'm like, I don't think I took any notice of like what was going on with my body or like how other people viewed it. And, mm-hmm. you know, knowing our society, that probably would have happened down the line eventually. Right. But that was like the first time that I think I saw something and thought, oh gosh, I've got to figure out how to fix this, even though I didn't know why or how, or, you know, when it was going to happen.
Right. And then that, it seemed like that kind of set the tone for other things that you would notice.
Mm-hmm, you know, exactly.
In the future through puberty and stuff. So how did getting breast cancer change your relationship with your body?
So I feel like it really separated my body from my mind. Mm-hmm. I think when I was diagnosed, all of a sudden it was just kind of like I was attached to this thing that I wasn't connected to anymore. It was like, you know, I couldn't figure out how it happened or why it happened. And, you know, they start to run all these tests to try to figure out like I don't have any family history of it, and I don't carry any of the known gene mutations that would cause it or, you know, possibly could have caused it. So I think it was just kind of like, I didn't know how to live within this body as it was going through. I kind of had to separate myself through the tests and, you know, chemo and all of these different things that were happening to it. You know, it was just kind of like looking back at a body that wasn't mine. I felt very disconnected from it as soon as I was diagnosed, and then throughout treatment as well. You know, part of it is, at least for me, like part of treatment was kind of finding my way back into accepting my body. Mm-hmm. I think And it really is, it's kind of like a whole new relationship, because all of the things that I used to focus on before are no longer really that like top priority. Like it didn't really matter if I was, cause I was actually somebody who gained weight during chemo.
My sister too.
I was very specific food cravings, which for me was like pasta, butter, and garlic. Like that was like what I wanted to eat all the time. And you know, they always say, make sure you're eating through chemo and like hydrating. And so I actually ended up gaining weight, and I couldn't have cared less, because I was just like, I have a very clear mission, and that's to get through treatment as unscathed as possible. And part of that is, you know, kind of giving up some of those, you know, ideals that were imprinted on me at an early age, and, you know, making new ones, which was just like, okay, well, walking around the block is a big win for me. That's a bigger win than fitting into a pair of jeans or, you know, taking the perfect Instagram picture. You know, not that to me was more important. The whole cellulite issue definitely fell off the radar for me. Like I wasn't concerned about toning up. I feel like that's really common. People are like, oh, I have to like tone, you know? And for me, it was just like, no, I, you know, my body is going to do what it needs to. So it was almost like I became more forgiving and was more focused on what was happening inside. So, you know, were my lungs okay to go for a walk around the park, or could my legs carry me up the stairs? And finding out whether or not the answer was like yes or no to those things was more important to me than, you know, worrying about, you know, how I looked in comparison to other people. That really fell off the mat for me. Like I wasn't comparing as much as I had been pre-diagnosis.
How do you feel post-treatment about your body and those same concerns that you used to have? Like, are they coming back, or are they still gone? Or like, what type of things do you think about your body image now afterwards?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think as I get, you know, kind of farther away from treatment, I am starting to forget maybe some of those lessons that I learned going through it, because it's hard to in this society to not, you know, compare and not see images and kind of make it kind of feel like you're somewhat less than if you're not holding up to a certain like body standard. But I think particularly for me, because I have, you know, a new set of breasts, that I am learning how to look at my body as a whole again, as opposed to, you know, the implants and then my body. So I try to really engage myself in good habits that, you know, confirm the parts of me that I'm really confident about, which is, you know, my resilience and the way that I feel after working out, as opposed to the way that I look after working out. And trying to go easier on myself. Like, oh, you know, there's a big thing where, oh, I gained a lot of weight during chemo, and then you see people that are like, I really want to lose it. And I wanted to tell myself that I needed to know why I wanted to lose it and if it was for a good reason or not. And I didn't make an active plan to try and lose it. I just told myself I would, you know, whatever my body could do, I would do. And whatever would come out of that exercise would be great, but that I wasn't going to put too much pressure on myself for it.
Yeah. I think what you said about how you feel after you work out rather than how you look after you work out is such a huge thing that a lot of us can learn from, where sometimes I'm at the gym and I just need to stop because I feel weak and I feel kind of sick. And like, I just feel like I can't really get into the workout because something is off. So I'll just stop and I'll go home and I'll just stretch and do some yoga stuff and kind of reconnect with what's going on. I don't like push myself through that kind of stuff like I used to, because I wanted a result. But now if I'm at the gym and I'm feeling it and I feel strong and I feel good, I'll be there for an hour and a half. Like because it's fun and it feels like my body is connecting to what I'm doing.
And yeah, I think, exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's so important because, so I signed up for a marathon in October. And part of it was that I wanted to really give myself enough time to see what my body was capable of. And slow and steady is my motto. I think I agree with you completely that like, if I'm at the gym and I'm running and I'm half a mile in and I'm just like, my body's telling me not to, then I just stop and I go home and I do the exact same thing. I'll stretch, or maybe I'll just throw a show on Netflix. Like it's more about I feel like I'm rewarding my body by giving it exercise. And, you know, my doctors also recommend it. So it's like, there's that kind of mental aspect as well, where I'm doing something to kind of help possibly prevent a recurrence in my mind. But also my body feels rewarded when I'm having a good day working out. But I always tell myself, I'm like, I'm not here to, you know, to drop any pounds or to change the shape of my thighs or the shape of my arms like that. This is my body now. I want my body to feel like it can move again.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a really good point. This is so weird. Almost everyone that I have interviewed on my podcast has ran a marathon or is like planning to in the near future. And one of the big turning points for me in my body image and self-esteem was running a marathon.
Oh, that's so awesome. That's
yes.
So cool.
So, and I saw that on your Instagram. I was like, no way. She's running a marathon too. I'm like, this is insane.
Yeah. It's so crazy. Cause like I thought, you know, like when I was thinking about doing it, feel like it's such a rewarding experience because it's not only like a physical game, it's a mental game. And I wanted to focus that energy away from treatment and into something that's a little bit more fun, which is the marathon.
Yeah. It's so mental. I mean, I have like trouble shaving because I get infections in my hair follicles.
Okay.
So I was doing my marathon training and I got an infection in my armpit from shaving.
Wow.
And so I got this, it was so painful. Like I could not move my arm. And so I was like, I can't run. Like the race is in like 3 weeks. So this was like pedal to the metal.
Yeah.
Lots of mileage. I'm like, I can't run. And like, I can't even put my arm at my side. Like I had to go to the doctor It was really gross and disgusting.
Yeah.
But so I was like, what am I going to do? Like, I can't run. So the most I had ran before my marathon was like 16 miles. Ryan was like, you know what? If you can run a half marathon, you can run a full marathon. Like your body literally can do it. It's just up to you whether or not you're going to make it happen. And I'm like, oh. So I ran and it took me forever. I think my finish time was like 6 hours or something.
Oh, but cool.
And so it's so mental. Like at about mile 18, my body was like, nope, I'm done. But my mind was like, hell no, you're finishing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I'm just telling myself that I'm just, you know, every day that I'm training is a good day that I can do that. And if I, you know, reach a point where maybe my body isn't able to do something, like I will think about it then. But I'm like, for right now, like I know that my mind is strong enough. So I'm just like kind of edging my body along slowly. So I'm following a plan, which is like very slow and steady. Like I'm at the back of the group anytime I run with a group, but I'm just like, hey, I mean, it's rewarding just to be like, I'm still here, like plodding along, even if I'm the turtle, I'm totally okay with it.
I think a lot of that ties back to just kind of our body image and just even regular days can be like that too, where some days you feel like you're super hot and you look good in everything that you try on. And other days you're like, I can't even wear my like sweatpants without feeling like I'm fat or frumpy or whatever. And
yeah, definitely.
That's just what happens. Like you have good days and bad, and you can't judge yourself based on the bad days. Otherwise you're not going to be able to push yourself on the good days.
Yeah, exactly. And I always tell myself when I'm having a bad day to just let it kind of ride itself out. Like it's, you know, pretending that it doesn't exist is to me more harmful than, you know, just sitting there being like, okay, well, I'm feeling bad, or I feel like I look bad, and that is what it is. And I'm just going to let this feeling exist. And I think that was the hardest part, was just existing with it.
Yep.
And then being like, okay, well, that's now I feel differently about things and I'm just going to move forward. And it always, you know, time always helps.
Yeah. And I absolutely agree with you as far as pretending that it doesn't exist. First of all, is lying to yourself, and it doesn't make it go away to pretend that it doesn't exist. So you're just pushing it down.
Yeah.
And then if you keep pushing it down and not letting it just kind of run its course, it'll build up. And over time you have this like pile of bad feelings like inside you. You need to like let it be there. Don't judge it. Don't kind of suppress it. Just say, yeah, you know, I'm not feeling great today, but maybe tomorrow, you know?
And that's the thing. Like they, you know, I think society has kind of trained us as women in particular that we need to be perfect and we need to feel perfect and we need to have the perfect mind as well. And it's just like, you know, I tell myself to turn off in those moments, to just be like, all right, phone's down, like TV's off, like maybe I'll read a book, like just something, or do a puzzle, like just something to kind of reset and be like, I'm going to let this feeling exist, but then I'm also not going to look for ways to antagonize myself, mm-hmm. you know, by reaching out into society where I know that those kind of triggers exist.
Exactly. And if you're in, when you notice like, oh, like what I'm doing right now is making me feel like shit. Like if I'm looking through someone's Instagram or something and I'm just like, ah, oh, you know, get, and I'm like, whoa, what are you doing? Like, stop, like put it down. Just don't feed into that, that emotion. Like you can acknowledge that it's there without fueling the fire.
Exactly. And I mean, and there's so, you know, there's just these words, like even in my email inbox, when I'm signing up for these like wellness letters, you know, because I'm thinking in my head, like, I want to be on a healthier path than in 2018 after my diagnosis. It's like, sometimes I'm just like, this isn't a wellness letter. This is a, you know, a fitness or a diet fad, you know, like trying to hide itself as some sort of wellness. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, it's so difficult because in the dark moments, I'm like, I don't want to fall into that hole and just be like, oh, hey, maybe if I drink this tea for like 8 days straight, I will feel like I've turned into the model that I want to see in the mirror. Like you just can't play those games. So I've, you know, a big thing this year for me is just switching off and, you know, making like a new message for myself. Like, hey, like I was able to do this, or, you know, this exercise or this thing at work, and kind of remind myself of the successes that exist outside of my body image, which is important to me to like remind myself at the end of the day, if I'm feeling really shitty about something.
Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, that's, the success is outside of your body. Like that's all there is.
Yeah. It's just, and it's a cycle, because it's mm-hmm. like, you know, you're looking the comparison game, like they say, comparison is the thief of joy. And it's so true, because you're looking at somebody else and you're like, oh gosh, like she's perfect. And I wish I looked like that. And someone else is probably looking at you saying like, oh gosh, I wish I had that. And it's just, it's a never ending cycle. If we're just kind of going around in a circle with a negative kind of gaze on other people. So I always try to say like, it's, you know, stop that and think about other things that make life worthwhile.
Yeah, exactly. Because those things are really all that matters, that matter at the end of the day. Like,
yeah. And spend time and money and resources kind of building that up in my life, as opposed to time and money and resources, you know, down into a hole of perfection that doesn't exist.
The truth of it is the things that are going to make you happy are different than the things that are going to make someone else happy. So it's up to us to find out what exactly that is for us and then pursue that.
You know, in life is that sometimes we forget that like we need to stop looking outwards and kind of look more inwards at what creates happiness for us.
Yeah. And it's not about comparing yourself to other people. It's about comparing you today to mm-hmm. you last week.
Exactly.
Or you yesterday, even. Is just, you can only compare yourself to yourself, because everyone else has different genes, different experiences, different backgrounds and family support and lifestyle. Like it's just.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. It's just so common that I'm like, you know, cause I'm guilty of it too. So every day I try to tell myself not to engage in that type of behavior. So I'm getting better at it. Definitely post diagnosis, I'm getting much better at that.
Yeah. Well, and we all do it, right? Like it's something that, you know, we all fall into those patterns, but as far as being able to be that voice to someone else to say, hey, no, like you don't have to compare yourself to my journey. Like your journey is unique, and you're doing what you can do today. And that's all that you can do. Like if you didn't get cancer.
Sure.
Like what would you tell yourself to still learn those same lessons? Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. Okay. And I think, no, it's just because it's kind of like how, you know, could I still have the same outcome, you know, if cancer wasn't present?
Yeah, yes. Taking the diagnosis out, like, would you say?
It totally is. And it is probably a really boring answer, but it would be taking more time with just myself. And it would be slowing down and, you know, saying no more, which is like maybe, you know, not doing things because others want me to do it, doing things because I want to. That would be the most basic way I could put that, is if I was able to give myself that advice, just be like, do you want to do it, or are you doing it because you feel like others want you to do it or you want to be perceived doing it? Like what is the true motivating factor there? That's what I would ask myself to really spend some time thinking. And I think that would kind of spark the changes that I'm seeing now.
Thanks so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, head over to iTunes and leave me a rating, tell me what you thought, and let me know what you'd like to hear next.